Moncrief on News Talk.
Brought to you by Avant Money. Think you're getting the best value from your bank? Think again.
Now, there is increasing evidence that many animals experience what we would call emotions, and not just mammals. It may also include insects. Geraldine Wright is Professor of Entomology at the University of Oxford and joins us now on News Talk. Geraldine, good afternoon to you.
And good afternoon to you.
Before we get to the experiments that you've carried out, what other evidence is there that perhaps insects do have emotions?
I think one of the most telling studies is one of learned helplessness in flies. So learned helplessness is a kind of depression that occurs when you basically you try to escape some kind of attack and you can't get away from it. And it causes an inability to even run for cover when you're released from prison. So we've been able to study this in the fruit fly, and it turns out that if fruit flies have been left in a chamber and subject to electric shocks, they stop trying to run to get away. And they basically have a kind of torpor, which we think is an analog to learned helplessness in people and in mammals.
Or even a sort of fatalism.
Yeah, exactly. There's a kind of giving up, actually, in terms of trying to do what's best for yourself. And it is a kind of depression, actually, that you can generate in an animal doing something like that.
Right, okay. So describe for us the study that you were involved with.
So I'm a honeybee biologist. I'm interested in how bees learn and remember floral traits. And I collaborated with a fellow scientist at Newcastle University, Melissa Bateson, and Melissa studies affect in animals. And what we did is we trained bees to learn to associate an odor with a food reward and an odor with a punishment, which was quinine. And if we train them like this in a restraint in the lab, the bees will very quickly learn to associate the odor with reward or with a positive outcome and a reward. And the ones that are given quinine will quickly learn to avoid it. What we found is in order to study whether bees actually had emotion, we were interested to see whether if we stress the bees out after they had experienced a task like that, and then we asked them about an ambiguous cue, like a scent they haven't smelled before, and we asked them, does this scent smell like the cue that's associated with the punishment or with the reward? The ones that had been stressed by shaking them were more likely to think that the odors were a signal of something negative. So they had a bias towards thinking that novel cues were actually potentially harmful or bad and were less likely to respond to it as if it were rewarding.
Okay, so they had an expectation from previous experience.
Yeah, so they learned these cues really well. But if you stress them out in the meantime and then you ask them, does this seem like a good odor that might predict reward or one that might predict pain, they were much more likely to think that it might predict pain.
Mm. Now, is that an emotional response or just an intelligent response?
So that's a really great question. This type of assay that we were using with bees, the structure of this assay has been used to try to understand and correlate the behavior of other animals with that of humans. The task that people usually give to people when they're trying to study depression is they survey people whether they are depressed or not prior to a task, and then they give them a word that is very difficult to tell outside of a context, like window pane. If someone said pain, you might think window pane, or you might think pain as in shock or hurt. And what they found is that people who are more likely to be depressed are more likely to think that it means pain, like it's painful. Emotions are a form of intelligence, right? They're basically allowing you to tune your ability to differentiate things or to recognize cues according to your state. So if you're in a positive state or if you're in a negative state, you can adjust your behavior accordingly and make better decisions.
During your study or any of the others, is it possible to see what's going on inside the brain of an insect, given that it's so small?
You can do that. It is possible to do that. And there are people who are able to study the actual circuits of reward and memory by using imaging, and they can see which parts of the brain are involved in decision making. So it is possible, actually, and it's the best animal for doing this is actually the fruit fly, believe it or not.
Huh. And what are their brain? Are their brains structured in any way similarly to our own or to a mammal's brain?
That again is another great question. The brain itself is quite different, but it is very complex. But there is a specific area of the brain which is involved in making the calculations about reward, or you know, basically the economic part of your brain that is constantly making decisions about the value of an experience or of whatever decision you're making. And the structure of that circuit is the same in an insect as it is in a mammal. The logic of that circuit is very similar. And it's very interesting that that's the case because it suggests that that is the best possible way to make those kinds of decisions, is to have a feedback system, basically, that allows you to make a relative calculation of the value of an experience.
When we're talking about emotions in creatures that small, I suppose there's a constant danger of anthropomorphizing all of this. Like, you know, is it legitimate to create some sort of equivalence between how a bee might feel and how a human might feel?
That's, again, a very tricky question, actually, and one that I'm sure philosophers could give some insight into. I think, you know, as scientists, we try very hard to be as objective as we can. And so we create assays that allow us to have an objective kind of answer. We don't want to use the same kinds of terms that are used for humans to try to describe an animal's behavior. And yet you see similarities in terms of the reasoning and the way that these behavioral outcomes arise in experiments that are of a similar design. And it's very hard to avoid thinking that it's not emotion, or it's not pain or fear or other kinds of behaviors that we would put that kind of label on, but which also have the same kind of adaptive value in an animal.
Yeah, it's. I can imagine it's uncomfortable for people, be they scientists or not, to have to even consider that prospect, because it massively complicates our life. I mean, notwithstanding, even the most ardent meat eater would understand the argument that pigs are sentient beings and perhaps it's not a great idea to eat them. Tiny little bees and bugs are in the same category. God save us tonight. How can we clean our houses anymore?
Yeah, it becomes very difficult, doesn't it? And there have been, you know, there are religious groups that have really grappled with these kinds of questions, certainly to try to understand, you know, how best to deal with them. But it does at least understanding that these animals have a brain which might be doing something similar to yours, maybe helps you to have some compassion for them in certain cases. And you just maybe you can appreciate life, and we can value life more knowing this kind of information.
Does it throw up Geraldine, ethical questions about conducting experiments on bees if the bees can feel emotion from these experiments?
Yeah, certainly you always have to think about the cost of doing experiments of this kind on any animal, right, in terms of the value of the information that you are getting in exchange for the procedures that you're using with the animals. I think it happens when we're working with monkeys. It happens when we work with any animal. And maybe it was all too convenient to be able to dismiss it, you know, when you're working with so many flies or bees, you know, that they're just small. But I still think that it's important for us always to think about when we work with an organism and we're trying to use it to understand something for the greater good, whether what we're doing is actually worth the cost. And so I don't know if I've answered that question very well. Certainly it would put me out of business if I were to say that I shouldn't do this with bees.
Yeah.
But I still think that reflection is very important. And it means that you design your experiments better. It means that you cause less suffering, which is always, I think, important.
I would imagine, though, within academia, even positing the idea that insects have emotions is a relatively new one.
Yeah, it is, actually. And there was some debate about it. There are scientists who work in my field who don't believe that it's correct to do that. And they don't they really challenged the idea that it's even close. But I think that it, in a very rudimentary sense, it's true.
And will this kind of work go on? I assume it will.
Will it? Pardon me?
Will this kind of work go on, as in studying insects for possible emotional responses?
So it's a natural consequence, these kinds of studies, of trying to understand how the brain works. And the reason that we work with insects at all is that they are smaller. They have a smaller brain with fewer neurons. It's more tractable to try to understand how the architecture of a relatively complex brain actually functions, so that we can understand how the principles of the way the brain works actually might generalize to our own mind and our own brain. And I think asking these kinds of questions about whether they experience emotion, or you know, whether they reason, or you know, what kinds of things these brains can do is just a natural consequence of trying to understand what the brain does in general.
Geraldine, thank you so much for speaking with us today. Geraldine Wright is Professor of Entomology at the University of Oxford.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Brought to you by Avant Money. Think you're getting the best value from your bank? Think again.